Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the host and the founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast and the Rise Above Justice Movement. Today, I will give a viewer discretion as advised due to the nature of the topics that we will be discussing. Today, I am joined by the absolute legendary Marley. Marley, welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored by the legendary title, and that's definitely how I see you as well.
So let's jump right in. So a little over a year ago, I began organizing on Instagram during the 2024 election in the United States, and I came across your profile, and I see this bright, bubbly, inspiring person. I did not realize who you were at that time, but as time went on, I have come to find you to be one of the most amazing, beautiful, inspiring people that has such a vibrant personality that can light up the literal room. There's nothing but positivity that comes from you. And I know it hasn't always been like that because you have one hell of a story, my friend. And I'm so excited to sit down, talk to you, and about what you're doing now as the founder of Survivors for Justice Reform, what restorative justice looks like to you, and how we can be better as a world, a world that recognizes that survivors need to be at the forefront of every single movement. Survivor voices are absolutely crucial, and you do that in every single way. And I cannot thank you enough for that.
Oh, that was such a beautiful introduction. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Feel free to jump in and let us know who you are, the work you do, and where you're headed.
Yeah, so I can share who I am and then maybe like what brought me into this work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so my name's Marley. I'm a multitude of things, as we all are. I'm a survivor. I'm the founder of Survivors for Justice Reform, like Zachary had said. I'm an author, dancer, Sagittarius, lesbian, dog mom, all kinds of things. I'm also from Canada. I'm based in Toronto, but I'm always traveling for this work and doing speaking and advocacy around the world, really, which I'm so grateful for. And what got me into this work, I'll share and just cut me off if I'm rambling on for too long. But yeah, I was studying social work in college. I was already pretty passionate about challenging objectification in the world, and that actually came through growing up in dance and wanting to challenge, just seeing how many people are impacted by eating disorders, actually, that was really my first social work passion. And it kind of brought me back to seeing like how objectification and rape culture impacts our relationship to our bodies. So I was actually really focused on that. And then as I was studying, I ended up being raped by a stranger. And unfortunately, it's not a unique story. I was clubbing, I was drinking with friends, and throughout the night, I slowly lost my friends at this club. And this man kind of popped up and offered to help me look for them. And he was very courteous and respectful at first. And then once we were alone, he really did a 180 and became violent, pulled down my pants, and started assaulting me. And I remember having this moment where I kept saying no, and I realized that my voice didn't have any power over what was happening. And I really just froze at that point. He covered my mouth and proceeded to rape me for several hours. And by the time I got out of there and ran back home to where I was living at the time, I really didn't know what to do. And notably, I didn't know restorative justice or transformative justice existed. And most of the survivors I connect with today through campuses and online, they also don't know about these options, which is part of why I'm so grateful we're having conversations like this. But because I didn't know it existed, I ended up going to the hospital doing a rape kit. And when I was asked, do you want to report or just go home? I was like, well, I can't fathom doing nothing at all. So I guess I'll report. And I started going through that system and just being really devastated by how re-traumatizing and dehumanizing it was. How honestly, I know people say the criminal legal system's re-traumatizing, but I'll go as far as to say like it can be abusive. And that's definitely what I felt going through this system. It dragged on for 3 years. I was mostly kept in the dark. I was treated like I had done something wrong. And by the time I was subpoenaed for the criminal trial, I really just wanted to walk away from the whole thing. But I also felt like a really deep grief around that idea of getting nothing at all. And this is when my friend asked me this question that I think, if we all ask each other, can catalyze really big change. And she just asked me, you know, if anything was possible, what would meaningful justice look like to you? And I got very clear that, you know, I wanted him to take accountability. I wanted to ask the questions I've had for years and get answers. I'd want to voice the impact without having to show up in a way that the courtroom deems credible. And I wanted him to actually do deep work to never do this again, like if that was possible. And my friend really just validated that. She validated my needs. She listened and she empowered me to advocate for what I needed. And so I did. I started doing research, and that's when I finally saw that this thing called restorative justice exists and that it's not new. It's something that's been done for a long time before the colonial criminal legal system, as we know it today, became like our culture's dominant norm. Before British colonization, there were so many different ways of communities doing justice, and a lot of Indigenous communities, especially, did restorative practices and healing circles. So, for me, what I ended up fighting for was for my assailant to go to therapy for months and months, and then for us to meet in a facilitated dialogue practice. And that was a very polarizing thing to ask for. Some of the prosecutors were really not on board with that idea. They thought something was wrong with me. They thought I didn't understand how serious rape is, which is a ridiculous thing to say to a rape survivor. And they really just like equated justice to punishment because that's really what we're taught. And it wasn't until one prosecutor, you know, came into the picture and she said, like, I've been a prosecutor for almost 20 years, and I constantly see victims re-traumatized, rapists acquitted, and in the rare case that they're convicted for usually, you know, a couple years max, they end up reoffending. So she said, I agree, we need to try something different. And she really fought to make this outcome happen. And I received a call about a month after meeting with her saying that she fought for it and she made it happen. And at that point, my assailant started therapy right away. And then we knew we were eventually going to meet in this circle. And that was so meaningful to me because that was the first time someone actually listened to my boundaries, listened to my needs regarding addressing this rape that I went through. And they said, you know, what you need matters. And that should be the standard. That should be the norm. Like for every survivor, it shouldn't be a radical idea to listen to us. So I'm really grateful still today for what she did. And having that process, my assailant doing that deep work to not just heal and look at his own individual stuff, but also to see how systems like rape culture and toxic masculinity, like how all of that played into him causing this harm in a way that would prevent him from doing this again, ideally. And then by the time we met in the circle, all that work had been done. And it was a really incredible process. Like it's still hard, obviously, sitting down with my rapist was never going to be a rainbows and sunshine experience, and it shouldn't be, because there should be room for all of our emotions, rage, sadness, empowerment, all of it. But it was a really, really cathartic process. Like, I was able to voice the impact. I heard him take accountability, which is so rare for survivors. I was able to ask the questions I've had for years and get some answers. And I really left that room feeling like I'd let go of 100 pounds of just trauma that was living in me. And after that, I thought about, you know, how I felt after the court process versus how I felt leaving the circle. And it was completely night and day. And so, knowing that this isn't for all survivors, I still feel like we all deserve informed consent. We deserve to know what our justice options are, and then to choose what's actually most aligned with what we need. And so I became very passionate about, at that point, about being loud about this, going to the media, sharing my story, advocating. And I really haven't shut up ever since. And a huge part of that is that I started receiving all these messages from survivors, like thousands and thousands of survivors around the world. And the most common thing I was hearing was, why did no one tell me about this? I wish I knew about this option. And that came in so many different forms. And so I really feel like a deep responsibility to make sure that every survivor knows this option exists and is supported in choosing what's right for them, and also making sure that they have access to restorative or transformative justice if they want it.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I think there obviously needs to be a lot more options than just automatically reporting to police and restorative and transform. Dang it. I always mess up on it every single time.
Words are hard.
But yes, especially. But I think there always, obviously, always needs to be those alternative options. And I'm really glad that I've discovered what restorative justice is. Because I think if I would have went through it, you know, myself, like, I went through, like, EMDR and, you know, like, all of those, like, therapies, and I did, you know, it helped a lot. And it got me to the point that I'm at now, you know, which creating this movement, I've connected with people like you. And I've connected with people, you know, like you said, like, all across the world, and interviewing, you know, Jeffrey Epstein survivors, and interviewing Harvey Weinstein survivors, and interviewing, like, oh my God, these are people that you don't just run into at a gas station, right? But, I mean, let's be fair. You never know who you're going to run into. But I mean, I ran into my assailant at a church, and it's like, you couldn't be any further from religion than anybody else. If only people in this church knew exactly what you did to me on Easter, mind you.
Wow.
Yeah. So you can imagine what went through my head. I looked over at my mom. I was like, is that who I think it is? She was like, I'm pretty fucking sure it is. And lo and behold, I was like, oh my God, you cannot be serious right now. Anyway, so walk us through, you know, what led you, you kind of like shared a little bit of your experience, you know, a lot of your story, which I think is incredible. Now let's jump in and talk about being the founder of Survivors for Justice Reform, what you do, how people can get involved and get plugged into that work. And I know you can ramble at this point, and I'm really excited to hear this. And then, you know, what's in the future for Survivors for Justice Reform?
Yeah, thank you so much. And just echoing, like, what a gift it is to be connected with one another, and like to be so deeply connected to the survivor, like the feeling of survivor solidarity around the world. It's such a powerful thing. And the fact that we can just like connect from across borders and share in so much, it's really powerful. So Survivors for Justice Reform, she just had her first birthday. I really founded her around this time last year. So October 2024 is when I founded the coalition. And it was really born out of this weird experience where I was receiving all those messages from survivors who were saying, I wish I knew about this. I wish there was more awareness. I wish I had access to this. And then at the same time, I was doing a lot of media and press. And I kept hearing from people who, as far as I know, don't identify as survivors. And they would kind of project this idea that I was like this unicorn and that no one else would ever want a restorative or transformative justice process. And if you're in those movements, you might be like, what? That's ridiculous. But and it is ridiculous. And it's not an uncommon idea. Like the carceral rhetoric, which equates justice to punishment, is so entrenched in our society that people just like think that justice exists in the courtroom or it doesn't exist at all. And they think that anything else is not valid. So I was hearing that, but then at the same time, I was like, no, but here are these thousands and thousands of survivors who are disproving what this like dominant narrative is saying. So I was thinking, like, how powerful would it be if we all came together and united our voices and helped to actually shift representation, helped to show that survivors are not a monolith. And the people who harm us, our abusers, are also not a monolith. Like, what's going to make them safer members of society, and whether they're able to become safer members of society, that depends on the person you're talking about, and it depends on the systems they're navigating and everything. So, this idea that we could have a one-size-fits-all approach to justice is so wrong, and we know that it's failing us. We know that it's failing us by rates of acquittal, by rates of reporting, by rates of survivors being re-traumatized in the courtroom. And then most clearly, we know it's failing because rates of sexual violence are not declining. So we're seeing people are not being held accountable, and rape culture violence itself is not going away. So that was really the impetus of like, let's see what happens if we come together. And I'm a really like creative person. I feel like I know I'm doing advocacy work and activism and everything, but I would say that I identify as like a creative first in the way I approach things. So I did kind of have this idea of like, what happens if I create this coalition and then just see where it goes? Like, kind of let it take a life of its own, which I know you've experienced that with Rise Above Justice Movement as well. And it's a pretty special thing. Like, all these people have come together. Right now, there's about 700 survivors who are members of this coalition. And our mission statement is simply, we are a global coalition of survivors of sexual violence and intimate partner violence and human trafficking, as well as allies who are advocating for restorative and transformative justice. And we've come together. There's over 700 of us at the moment, growing every day. Anyone can get involved. And we have chapters around the world. So people have stepped up to be representatives, which means that there are about 37 chapters right now. And we have ones in Canada, the States, Australia, India, the Philippines, the UK, which has been, again, just so special and powerful to connect from around the world. And in terms of like what we're focused on, a lot of the chapters are looking at local policy change, at local organizing efforts and community building related to restorative and transformative justice. And then at the global level, like all of us together as a coalition, we're really focused on, I mean, very much what you're doing on this podcast, like the power of survivor-led storytelling to shift hearts and minds. And there's such a deep knowing for me and for, I'd say, most people involved with the coalition, if not everyone. We know that our stories as survivors, our lived experience holds so much power. And people who haven't lived these things, they have assumptions about what justice or healing should look like. But when we actually hear from survivors, we see that, like, the dominant idea of what justice or healing looks like doesn't always translate into our experiences. So I've really seen through the coalition, through my speaking, because since almost 2019, I've been speaking full time and traveling around the world. I've delivered talks on this topic for over 100,000 individuals, prosecutors, military, students, police, campuses, therapists, sexual assault nurses. And I really see that yes, statistics and definitions and research, like these things are very important and powerful. But to me, there's nothing like a survivor story to catalyze change and change people's minds. And then ideally, that translates into changes with funding and policies and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think the work that you're doing with Survivors for Justice Reform is so incredibly crucial, not only here in the United States and in Canada, but like you said, connecting with survivors like all across the globe, I think, and coming together for like ending that sexual and gender-based violence, but also recognizing there's alternatives to reporting directly to police. Now, I know whenever I attempted to report my assault the first time, my first assault, I was not believed. That department literally criticized me and literally looked me up and down and said, "We do not believe you."
Wow.
Then moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I had a whole different experience. I actually had the rape kit done. You know, I went into this room and, you know, answered like all these questions and did this rape kit. And that was probably one of the most traumatizing experiences because I have always been kind of weird about people like touching me, especially people that I don't know. And I think that comes from my trauma experience whenever I was still in high school. But we have this thing that, you know, and I hear this still to this day, and it's 2025, but we have this thing that boys will be boys. And that literally drives me up an absolute fucking wall. Because no, boys will not be boys. Boys will be held accountable. And I understand that anybody could be a perpetrator. However, what I've realized and what I know and what I see, not all men, but always a man. And I say that from a male perspective. So I just want to be very clear on that. Now, whenever you created the Survivors for Justice Reform, what was that initial reaction? Because I know you still got those messages, you still got, you know, people wanting, you know, like, how can I get involved? How can I get involved? How can I get involved? But whenever you started seeing it really come together, what was that like, oh shit moment? You know what I'm talking about? Because I had it too. And we hit 1,000 followers, and then we hit 10,000 followers, and then we hit 100,000. And now we're almost at 200 and something thousand. And you've watched it grow too with the Rise
Yeah.
of Justice movement, but also watching your social media just explode too has been incredible. You know, and obviously we collaborate on a lot of posts, which I'm incredibly grateful for because it's brought a lot of people in to our movement, but also to your movement and vice versa. And now these conversations are starting around restorative justice and transformational justice. Aha, I got it right. I said it correctly that time.
You crushed
But what
it.
was that? What was that moment for you? Like, what was it like just seeing it all come together? Like that first meeting, you know, what was going through your head? What was going through your mind? Like, walk me through that.
Yeah. I think for me, there's been so many milestones over the years and hitting different numbers of members and things like that. And that's been incredible. I guess I'll highlight two. So the first one I'll highlight is honestly, again, like it just comes back to the survivor stories. And there was one message. I mean, I'm sure same as you, we receive messages like this all the time, like really heartfelt disclosures where people are just, you know, like really laying it all out and sharing so vulnerably about what they've lived through and survived. But for me, that's always where I'm like, wow, that's what this is all for. And I've received a lot of messages like that, but I remember receiving one in particular where someone just said, like, I feel like I've been waiting to hear this message since I was 13. And that just hit. It just hit in a different way because it's like, wow, like that is the power of sharing our stories and using our voices when we're able to and making sure people know about their options and paths to justice. Like you just never know who's listening and how deeply they need to hear something. Like I remember someone told me early on in my advocacy journey, she was like, don't get discouraged if there's two people in the room, whether it's two people at a talk you're giving or two people on an Instagram live. Like if one of those two people comes up to you after and says, I've been waiting to hear this since I was 13 and it healed something in me so deeply, like that is more than worth it. Like that, you know what I mean? If that's the impact of my life, like that's, I forget this every day when I'm like, I need to do more. But like, if that's the impact of my life, then that's so beautiful and incredible. And then in terms of the coalition growing, I will say that this conference we just had was so incredible and we were really ambitious about it. We started off being like, it'd be really cool to have an in-person like community panel, and it kept growing. And then at some point we were like, I think we kind of accidentally planned a conference, and we just hosted it in collaboration with this amazing organization that stands against child sexual abuse in Toronto. And 200 people joined. There was 100 in person and then 100 online around the world. And when we got on that panel and myself and three other coalition members were sharing, I had goosebumps the entire time because, yeah, that was the holy shit moment where I was like, I knew survivors coming together and sharing our stories in this way would be so powerful. And I didn't even realize how powerful it would be. Like, it was so, I was really like crying up there on that panel because I was just so moved by the collective like resilience and solidarity and the wisdom from our lived experience and the very clear calls to action of we need versions of justice that are actually survivor-centered, trauma-informed, healing, reflective of what we need. So that was like a really beautiful moment for sure.
If you go through and listen to the other episodes, your name is actually brought up a couple times.
Oh, that's nice.
because I've talked to,
Hopefully.
it is, yeah, there's nothing negative to say about you.
Oh.
And I say that wholeheartedly. And I was actually just telling my mom, I was like, I do like a pre-interview and then we do this and we do that. But with your work, I didn't even need to do a pre-interview. Literally at all, because I already know exactly what I wanted to talk about. I already know exactly how I want to frame it. Because, and I love that because it's a lot less work on my end, obviously, but also your end too, where we can just sit down and just have this natural conversation where it flows together. And, usually I lose my train of thought, but with yours, I'm so intrigued by the work that you do. And I'm so committed to amplifying your voice, but also amplifying the work that you're doing and the coalition is doing, because it's beyond inspiring and it's so healing to be in those spaces. I promise I will do better at attending the meetings,
Oh my
but
God, you're fine. I feel like so many people, like, I have such a guilt complex too. And I feel like so many people, every call, they start off by being like, I know I haven't done enough, but, and I'm like, you're good. You're on the call. You're doing a podcast right now. Like, you're great.
And one of those people that mentioned you is actually Amanda Carrasco. And whenever I tell you, I sat down and did Amanda's interview for the podcast. Now, anybody who's listening, please go back and listen to Amanda Carrasco's story, because it is one of the most incredibly deep and impactful stories that I've ever heard. And I've been doing this work for close to 16 years, and I've never met somebody quite like Amanda. Other than Marley, of course, but you both have like very similar personalities, and it's so good. I know she had a fantastic job, or did a fantastic job at, well, I guess the conference that you
Yeah, it's the panel I was just talking about where I had like goosebumps. She was on that panel.
just there's just something about bringing people together for one common thing, and that's just smashing the patriarchy as a part of that too, right?
Absolutely.
So in a male-dominated world, right, how do we recognize the need for restorative justice, and how can we as communities recognize that, but also that decolonizing piece of it too? You mentioned it earlier about colonization. Obviously, it's very rampant in the United States too. Maybe we see that on a daily basis, but thinking about that, how do we recognize the ongoing need for those alternatives? And there's a very simple answer to this. I'm gonna let you ramble here in just a second, but there's a very simple reason to this. Look at the headlines. Look at those news headlines. It gives you everything you need to know. That's always been my answer to that part. What about from your perspective?
Well, there's a few things that come to mind, and I guess the first thing that comes to mind is that these are violent systems, like patriarchy, colonialism. These are violent systems that impact all of us. And obviously, they impact us to different degrees. I'm a white, lesbian, cis woman, right? So, like, I'm not impacted by colonization in the same way that an indigenous person is. And all of us are impacted by these violent systems in so many ways every single day. And an example of that I can give is, like, you were speaking earlier about how our culture will kind of preach, like, boys will be boys. And I was speaking about this earlier today, actually. We get so caught up in this individualistic lens where we look at a man, let's say, who caused harm, and we kind of say, like, oh, he's this bad apple. We just need to throw him away. But at some point, we need to examine the barrel that's holding those apples. Like, we need to contextualize harm and see what is producing this violence. What is leading people to justify this degree of harm? Because, in my belief, no one's born evil or bad. I've never looked at a baby and been like, oh, that looks like a perpetrator. Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me. So, I really feel like there's so much systemic violence that teaches people, and usually people holding privilege, to justify a degree of harm, to disconnect from their humanity, to disconnect from their empathy. And this results in so much harm. And it's obviously painful for the oppressed person. It's leaving them harmed, and that's a very obvious form of violence. And I also think there's a certain, like, level of violence to the spirit. Like, for someone who's causing harm, or they're taught to dehumanize someone, or they're justifying treating someone this way, or they're being desensitized through video games where they're, killing women every single day. Like, I think that's also a form of violence to all of us. And the result is, like, so much trauma for the people who experience it, for marginalized communities. And then the result is also trauma and desensitization for the people causing harm. So, to me, it's never even a thought of, like, men versus women. It's actually, like, all of us versus patriarchy. And it, to me, it's not indigenous people versus settler people. It's all of us versus colonialism. And same with racism, and same with transphobia and homophobia, right? So that was definitely a ramble, but I'll kind of leave it there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just love the way that you speak. And I'm gonna be fully honest. And I talk about this stuff like in real time. Whenever you said just sorry, I keep laughing about this because it's the way that you said it. But I don't look at anybody and say, that's a perpetrator. Oh my God, Marley. Whenever I tell you that Mountain Dew just about went all over my entire equipment, because the way you said it, and I know it was like meant to be like literally, as literal as it can be. But the way that you said it, it just got to me for a second because it's like, I'm not gonna look at this baby in a stroller and be like, that's a perpetrator. It doesn't happen like that. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that I keep thinking about that. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I'm not editing this. Anybody out there, this is my
No, I love it.
personality.
I love these real moments, you know?
Because that was just so damn good. And I was sitting here and I looked over at my mom and I was like, oh my God, I gotta tell you what she just said. Because I was like, this is incredible. But hearing the boys in the locker room in high school, middle school, like just the way that they talked to each other, and this is coming from somebody who obviously is very queer, somebody who's very feminine, or I tend to be feminine sometimes, sometimes I'm masculine, all those, fuck the gender norms, right? But I can't even tell you half the things that I heard in that locker room, and I'm gonna give the Cliff Notes version. They would be like, oh, look how big, this is, and look how big that is, and look how much hair you have, and look how much hair I don't have. It's like, if I said that, I'm calling a bunch of words, and I'm not gonna, jump into those words, but if I say that, and then they're like, oh, that's just boys being boys, and you go talk to your teacher, like, oh, I overheard this, and they're like, oh, they're just being friends, and they're just being this and being that. I'm like, sure, they're talking about literally like drugging their girlfriend at a party next weekend, but sure, they're just boys being boys. And it runs really fucking deep, Marley. You know that as well as I do. But my last question to you, and then we'll wrap up. My last question to you is, what are you seeing now in the age of like censorship on social media, in the age of shadow banning? I know you've been hit with shadow banning just like we have, and we have 200 and something thousand followers on social media. You would think that that reach would be astronomically high, right? But it's not, because whenever you challenge the patriarchy, you talk about what's happening, Jeffrey Epstein file, we literally go down in that algorithm and it just shuts us completely down. What are you seeing on your end from Canada looking into the United States, but also across the globe, because it's happening everywhere. But what are you seeing?
Well, I'll name two things. I think the most obvious thing that I'll see a lot when a post does get reach is that really sort of extreme right-wing rhetoric, victim blaming, things like that, that to be honest, don't shock me anymore. That doesn't mean I'm at peace with them, but they don't shock me anymore. I'm like, there's so many trolls on the internet. But what I'd rather focus on, at least for a conversation like this, is I'm seeing a lot of the left, so people in progressive movements, often like in group fighting, sort of policing one another and tearing one another apart. And I'm a leftist, like I'm not separating myself from that or those progressive movements. But I think we need to be really careful at this time, especially because we know that the stakes are extremely high. We know that the levels of violence and systemic oppression happening right now, that it's scary. Like it is a scary time, and I think we all feel that. And the last thing we need right now is for the left to eat itself and for us to have complete division in a way that our movements fall apart. And I would encourage anyone who's interested in learning about restorative and transformative justice, and these are movements that we know they focus more on healing and preventing violence and repair rather than soul punishment. Anyone who's interested in learning about those, also start to learn about how you can apply restorative and transformative justice practices into your own day-to-day life, into your relationships, into the way you interact with people online, into the way you engage in community organizing work. And that's actually what our Skillshare is about. For the next coalition-wide call, we have Skillshares bi-monthly, and we're focusing on restorative and transformative practices in community organizing because we need each other right now. We need each other always, but especially right now. And if we're just constantly tearing down the way someone's trying to do activism, we're going to push them right out of these movements. And we can't have that right now. So we all need to learn skills around. Adrienne Marie Brown has a book called Loving Corrections. So we need to learn skills around loving corrections, around compassionate accountability, around conflict transformation. And this is such a key part of making sure that our movements are actually sustainable and they're actually effective as well. So that's something I see a lot online is us getting in the way of our movements. So can we actually identify our values and then like embody the movements that we're fighting for rather than becoming the toxicity that we are claiming to fight against?
You know, it's not even Sunday and you're bringing me to church because whenever I tell you, you're speaking the truth and power and preaching to the choir, my friend, like, abso-fucking-lutely yes. And I know how many other people are, going to be listening to this. And they're going to feel that exact same energy that you just brought into answering that because that, yes. And I also wonder how many people are going to chuckle at the same part that I did that we were just talking about just a little bit ago because I'm still thinking about it. I can't get it out of my head. I keep thinking about it and I keep chuckling because it's so real. It's probably like the realest thing that I've heard in a very long time. But it's
Amazing.
so, I cannot stop laughing about it because it's not even a laughable moment. Like it's like dead ass serious. But at the same time, like you gotta have fun with this shit or it's gonna drive
Oh.
you nuts. And I
Yeah,
know you
okay,
know that.
everyone, if you chuckled at that comment, write baby under the the post.
I feel like I need to put that in the caption. P.S. There's a moment in this episode that you will laugh your ass off. And don't be like Zach and make it in real-time conversation, but here we are.
Yeah. No,
But
I'm so passionate about making sure that we have moments of like lightheartedness and levity. Again, it's about making this work sustainable. Like we can't do this work if it feels like a funeral 24/7. We just can't.
Oh my God, that is so incredibly valid. And I've been to a lot of funerals, but holy shit, you're absolutely correct on that. There is nothing, and I always think back to one of the first things that I heard Shannon Watts say. Shannon Watts is the founder of Moms Demand Action in the United States. This is a marathon, not a sprint. Now, I recognize that and I felt that to every god, every sense of energy that I've probably ever had in my body. But I think back to that and I use that all the time and I use that expression because in reality, this really is a marathon because we're not going to eradicate sexual and gender-based violence overnight. This is something that we have to decolonize again and decolonize within the decolonization within our communities and within ourselves. Because if we're going to eradicate sexism, eradicate homophobia, we have to do it within ourselves. And we need to recognize that, decolonize within ourselves, decolonize self-care. And there's a common theme, it's about decolonization. But is there anything else that you wanted to share? How can people get involved with Survivors for Justice Reform? How can they follow you on social media? Just, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, get involved with the coalition. If you go to either our social media or our website, and both of them are Survivors for Justice Reform, the four is like the number four. So our website, survivorsforjusticereform.com, you'll see that there's information and then there's a form you can fill out to become a member of the coalition. Then you'll get access to our WhatsApp community, which is rich with like connection, friendships, resource sharing, jobs posting, community organizing every single day. And then you'll also get invites to all of our events. So, like I said, there's bi-monthly skill shares that happen. I'm really looking forward to this one that's coming up that I was speaking about earlier. And then there's also opportunities if you want to get involved as a state rep, as a provincial rep, and really dive in, you can do that. Or you can just be on the outskirts and just be like, I'm just, here cheering everyone on from the sidelines. That's totally fine too. Like we've already talked about, a lot of people in every movement have guilt around this feeling like we're not doing enough, but it takes a lot to show up. So, you know, even the fact that you're a person listening to this podcast right now, like that is a way of engaging in this work. So please don't, you know, underestimate that. And then my personal advocacy accounts, I'm speaking on these topics literally every day in ways where I strive to be creative, humorous, real, honest, educational, entertaining, all these things. So you can follow. It's just my name, Marley Liss, MarleyLiss, and that's my website as well. You can learn more about my programs, my keynotes, my workshops. I'm a full-time speaker, so check out programs there. I have my book coming out in 2027, which shares my story of restorative justice after sexual harm. I'm really excited about that. And I also have, last thing I'll say, I have a resource guide on my website, marleyliss.com/resource. And there's a resource guide for restorative and transformative justice. It has global organizations, podcasts, books, documentaries, all sorts of resources. And that's free. So you can check that out as well.
Absolutely. All right, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. You know, you have an open invite anytime. And I will see you on the interwebs and in your meetings. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
You know, thank
Yeah,
you
thank
for.
you so much, Zachary. This has been amazing. And again, I really just want to like take a moment to honor all of the incredible work that you're doing. I think you're like carrying so many torches, and I see that, and the ripples of impact that you're making is so immense. So thank you for being you. Thank you for doing that work. We're all here to support you too. So never, you know, never hesitate to reach out.
Likewise, you take care of yourself, okay?
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.